The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Markets. I've got Sean Hackett back here from Hackett Financial to talk about what's going on in the world of commodities. Sean, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. It's a good Friday, literally. Good Friday.
Yeah, it really is a good Friday. It's better than most.
Yes.
So, yeah, we have had a report come out yesterday, and you nailed it, man. You said 2 or 3 weeks ago on the show here that you thought there would be between 90 and 91 million acres come out of this report, and you're right there. You're right in the middle of that. So I guess, Sean, talk about the report, what your thoughts were there, how the market reacted to that, and then kind of what's in store for as we roll through this planting season here.
Well, science for the USDA actually to, you know, tell the truth once, you know, actually put the right number out, because off so many times, you know, they put numbers out there don't make any sense, and then they adjust them much, much later. But at least this time, their planting intentions came in fairly closely. I was traveling all over the country this winter doing speeches in front of farmers and bankers and insurance companies and seed guys. And everywhere I saw, I just did not see the big acreage number that I was hearing from so many other people. So that's at least set the bar, the initial bar for what the farmer was supposed to plant, what they think they're going to plant. However, it doesn't mean that's what they're going to plant. The weather has a lot to do with what they're actually going to plant. And what happens to prices while they're planting has a lot to do with it. Obviously, corn reacted. Essentially, we put back on what we took off the two prior days going into this report. So when you really look at it, we're the same price today as we were 3 days ago. But nonetheless, it was a nice reaction in the marketplace. It looks to me, we've been saying this for a while, we're going to have a warm, fairly dry April. Meaning, yeah, we're going to get some rain, but not a lot of, enough rain that's going to slow things down. So it looks to me like we could have a really, really favorable early, quick start to the planting season. And the market is taught that if that happens, you have to start immediately pushing those numbers up a little. And so I think that that's something you have to pay attention to. There's a reaction to the report, and then there's the trading of weather for April that immediately starts to change those numbers. So I think the market's going to trade a higher number than that over the next week or two with these forecasts that I think are going to be coming out showing very warm, drier conditions for most of the Midwest. And that's going to be bearish. That'll be a negative force on the marketplace. So with a great start to the planting season, as we talked about last time, we still need to look down in South America, second crop corn going into pollination mid-late April to mid-late May. And we think it's going to be really, really unfavorable. So we got two forces. We have great planting that's going to want to push the price down. We're going to have very poor weather for pollination that's going to suggest a significant shortfall in the crop, wanting to push prices up. And the answer is, which one wins out? I kind of feel good planting will win out in the beginning. Safrinha corn crop will win out later, meaning it will be a little bit of a press down and then press up. And then, of course, we have the potential for an elevated frost risk in the first half of May. Just because it's elevated doesn't mean it has to happen. But, you know, that could be another factor that you get worry over safrinha corn, frost scare, and you get yourself a pop here in May and give opportunities for farmers to catch up on some of those cash sales that many are behind on at this moment in time. So I kind of feel those are the variables to really pay attention to, at least in the next 2 to 4 weeks, what's going to drive the market psychology in corn. And, you know, soybeans will, you know, be the anti-market to all that stuff. So,
Yep. So looking at yesterday's report when it came out, obviously corn lost about 4 million acres from last year. You saw, looks like soybeans jumped up about 3 million acres from last year. And, you know, wheat, 1 million acres down from last year. You look at spring wheat, and it's about stayed the same, which obviously, there's not like a big change there, a big swing there. I guess as you're looking at that, talk a little bit about the winners and losers there. I mean, it feels like I really thought cotton would pick up more acres than it did, but I guess what's your thoughts there?
I think the soybeans acres needed to be up if we're going to ever hope to supply some of this renewable diesel demand. And I think the corn acres had to come down. We just planted too many. So I think those numbers did what they were supposed to do. Spring wheat, you know, I think where we're at with that is fine. But honestly, I was surprised that cotton acres didn't pick up more. We need to pick up more acres. I don't believe that acres number is enough of a buffer. We just can't seem to have good weather. We have not had good weather in Texas for a long time. Maybe this year will be different, but I just don't think that's enough acres. We're at bare minimum pipeline levels for cotton ending stocks. And so, yeah, of all the numbers that I was surprised with, not what the market was surprised with, I kind of thought those acres would have been higher, and I think they need to be higher. So I think the cotton market needs to do some work to get those numbers up. If we get off to a fast start, it does typically also mean, by the way, some extra cotton acres will get planted in the deep south. So, but yeah, that of all the surprises I saw, I think cotton acres being on the smaller side was a little surprising to me. I would have expected a bigger reaction there, for sure. So. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some of your long-term predictions you have for the U.S. market. You talked a little bit about Brazil here earlier, kind of what you saw happen there. The heat unit thing has been an issue down there. It was the same issue we had last year, looking at where we're at now. looking at the U.S. marketplace, you've talked about the possibility of a May freeze, which if you're looking at where, you know, wheat is right now and how it's coming out of dormancy. I had a conversation with Tanner Emke, with CoBank economist, and he grew up in Western Kansas out there. And his parents talked quite a bit about something that happened in the 80s similar to this, where started out like this nice warm weather, and then you had that late freeze hit, and it zapped the market zapped the wheat, because wheat does have nine lives, but sooner or later those nine lives get trimmed down pretty quick as you go through that growing phase. So I guess talk about that a little bit, and then what you see for the summer months going into some pollination periods, kind of what your models are showing you.
Well, the whole reason why a May freeze is so detrimental to winter wheat is because of the phase that you're in. You know, if you look at the kind of temperatures you need during that stage of development, I think you only need 29, 30 degrees to create severe frost damage. Mm-hmm. Whereas in February, March, you need 20 degrees or 15 degrees. You know, you just don't need it to be that cold because it's so vulnerable at the stage of development. Right. And the hit to yields is also, you know, immediate and irreversible. Like I said, nine lives, but your ninth life is May, and there's no more lives past that. So anytime we've had May freezes that have been large enough and deep enough and soft enough, you know, can cause significant. We actually had one back in 2017, if I recall correctly, where we had a quick one that came in and caused some considerable damage at that time. I think, if I recall correctly, we had well over a dollar rally in the market in a week or two from that frost, which was, I would call it a moderate, I wouldn't call it extreme, but it was definitely a frost at a time that the market was extremely bearish. So definitely something to pay attention to. And obviously the perfect storm, early rip-roaring planting season in April, get everything planted at a record pace, we're rocking and rolling, and you have the max amount of acres that would be exposed to potential for, you know, either dramatically slowing down development or having to replant. And so that just comes down to exactly when the cold weather comes, how cold it is, for how long. And obviously those, the devil and the details are still to come. You know, Casey, we've talked about before that 2024 and 2025 in our work has the highest probability for a major crop problem that you can have based upon our cycles. We have the Gleisberg cycle, the 89-year cycle that completes an entire 11-year solar cycles, and a complete solar cycle that we verify for 11 centuries, that every time we get to this window, we have historically gotten a 1 in 100-year drought. So that is saying watch out for this year and next. We know every major crop problem has occurred either at the trough or the upswing 11-year solar cycle to the peak. We're currently just forming the peak on the upswing. So we're in the perfect spot on the 11-year solar cycle where all major crop problems have occurred. And the moon, earth, sun nutation cycle where the earth wobbles 5 degrees off its axis every 18.6 years. What we found is that when it's at its maximum wobble of 5 degrees, which is right now, and will stay that way for next year, every major crop run has occurred either at the peak wobble or within 1 to 2 years after the peak wobble, every single one. So these three major long-term cycles are all saying we have an elevated risk. Now what we need to do with all that information is micromanage the Atlantic and the Pacific sea surface temperatures to look for what historically has caused drought when we've had those other cycles in place. We looked at the 2012 drought, the 1988 drought, the 1936 drought, the 1934 drought. What's interesting, there's a popular belief that we must have a La Nina, don't have a major drought. Well, no question, a La Nina is a warm, dry pattern, and droughts do tend to be promoted by La Nina. But interesting enough, in those four droughts I just mentioned, three of them were neutral in the sea surface temperatures of the Pacific. One was the major La Nina. So 2012 was neutral positive sea surface temperatures of the Central Pacific. 88 was a strong La Nina. 36 was a neutral negative mean, neutral to La Nina reading, and 1934 was a neutral positive reading, meaning we didn't have La Nina, but we had a neutral reading. And so we don't need La Nina by, let's say, mid-late June into July. We just need it to not be El Nino. It cannot be El Nino. If it's El Nino, we've never had a major crop problem due to drought from an El Nino. I'm highly confident with the way we're tracing our trajectory that we're going to at least be in some form of a neutral reading by the core of the growing season. Other factors, every major crop problem due to drought, especially the four we just mentioned, had a very warm North Atlantic. So if you look off of Maine or Nova Scotia, warm sea surface temperatures were always present in that region. We must have that. Bar none, every single major drought has had a warm North Atlantic in that region. Right now, we're, I would say, kind of neutral, maybe a little cooler, neutral, but we are warming. It doesn't matter what it is today. It matters what it is in mid-late June into July. But something to watch. That's a must based upon historical precedent. Now, some of the things that can vary. The Gulf of Alaska was cold in 2012. The Gulf of Alaska was cold in 1988. It was not cold in 1934, and it was not cold in 1936. But in 1936, we had a negative Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is that cold sea surface temperature that comes right by off the coast of California. We had a negative Pacific Decadal Oscillation in 2012. We had a negative Pacific Decadal Oscillation in 1988. So my feeling is, got to have the Atlantic hot up in the north. We don't need both, but we do need one or the other, in my opinion, to turn this year into something that could create a major crop problem due to drought. High heat comes from having these factors in place. And remember, there's still Tonga at work, meaning the Tonga water vapor aerosols are still in the stratosphere. The working theory is they would stay in the stratosphere for up to 5 years from the time that eruption went off. We have a couple more years to go. We are still seeing record daytime temperatures all over the world. So anywhere where those teleconnections say it's supposed to normally be hot, we've come to expect that Tonga jacks it up. Remember, we need 100-degree days. We use Des Moines as the reference location, as a benchmark. Every major crop problem had at least 10 or more 100-degree days in Des Moines to create a major crop problem. In 2012, I believe we had 12 100-degree days in Des Moines. The last year, Casey, that we had very high daytime temperatures in the center of the Midwest. In the last 4 years, we've had a lot of dry weather, and there's been a lot of people talking about how dry it's been, and these crops have come through better than expected. And yes, there were some extreme hot temperatures out west. There were some extreme hot temperatures up north, but where it counts, eastern Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, western Indiana, southern Minnesota, we've not had it. We had two 100-degree days in the last 4 years. That's why we haven't had a major crop problem, because if you don't get those regions in trouble, you're not going to have a trend line yield, but you're not going to have a major crop problem. So, so that is what we're really looking for here. I'm pretty confident there'll be enough dry weather. It's can you get the heat to go along with it? And that's why we think this year and next is an elevated risk for that to happen in the Midwest. If it does, and we get those 100-degree temperatures, the likelihood is we're going to have enough insufficient rainfall from this setup in the cycles and the sea surface temperatures to create that Gleisberg cycle drought that is verified for the last 11th century. So the most important thing to take a look at is what's the North Atlantic? What is the Pacific Decadal Oscillation? What's the Gulf of Alaska? What do they look like early June? I think that's really where you're going to be able to kind of make a stab at whether this is going to be a weather scare, somewhat of a blow trend line in your crop, like we've been seeing. You get a shot to sell the crop a little bit, but it comes right back down. Or are we going to deliver something like 2012 or 88 or 34, 36? Too early to tell. Right now, the Gulf of Alaska is cold. than colder than normal. The Pacific Decade Oscillation is not. We are moving towards La Nina, and I'm pretty confident that we will at least be neutral. So I feel pretty good about that. The North Atlantic is neutral, a little cooler neutral, but it was warming. So we have some unfinished business here over the next couple of months to monitor these areas to tell us whether we're going to be upping the ante or not on what this looks like. Either way, we still believe the worst of the growing season, no matter how well this turns out, is going to be the late June to early August timeframe, completely different from what was last year. So I still feel no matter what happens, we're still going to get a credible weather market rally that farmers can sell into. The question is that all we get like we had last year, or can we get something more sustainable and serious that creates a much bigger issue? And keep in mind, for sure, La Nina is going to be alive and well and part of the entire first half, at least, of the growing cycle for South America. And that means Argentina and the southern half of Brazil are going to be in the hot seat, just like they were a few years back. So, you know, if the U.S. were to come up short, we have plenty to worry about in South America with a full-blown La Nina coming back. So always looking longer term, always trying to see what's coming. You know, there's lots of reasons to think we could be setting up for back-to-back weather issues in the two most important regions for corn and soybean production.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about this a little bit. So you look at the current drought map. I'm looking at it right now. Probably should share that real quick. Let's just do that. If you're looking at the current drought map and where things are at, and you start seeing some of the stuff that's there, if you look at the current drought map right now, here's Iowa, right? Here's Minnesota. So pretty much all of Iowa is in either moderate to extreme drought, right? And that's pretty much the same area that was there last year and the same area that we saw the year before that, right? I guess this is the L here means long-term effects, if you're looking at the way this plays out. So long-term effects, typically greater than 6 months, hydrology and ecology. So I'm assuming that means that there's been, I know back here in Kansas where I'm from, down in this area, this has been a drought-stricken area as well. So this is a pretty big swath of the Corn Belt. Iowa produces, what, 10% of the nation's crop of corn? Is that right? Or is it more than that?
It's
something like that.
I think Illinois and Iowa combined. Gosh, I thought it was higher. I'm not sure what the number, but I thought it was closer to 35% of the crop, corn crop.
I think that might be right.
I think Illinois and Iowa are roughly at 30 to 35%, and then you fill in the rest with the balance of everyone else.
Yeah, that's
that's why those two states are so important to get into trouble. If you don't get them into trouble, and of course they produce 280 bushel, 250, 300 bushel, some of them. So, what this is saying, Casey, what this is saying is that we don't have a lot of fudge factor in the center of some of the best ground in the U.S. for growing corn and soybeans. We just don't have a lot of fudge factor here. And that's the importance of saying that if we get those hot temperatures we talked about, how that could, what this is saying is, unless there's a dramatic change in this moisture profile over the next few months, if we go into June and it looks something like this, or let's say maybe it gets a little worse, it's a flash drought. Meaning, as long as you keep getting just in time range, you're fine. But the minute it stops and you throw 100 degrees multiple days on something like this, you immediately get a flash drought.
Right.
Iowa will not produce a big crop if they have 100 degree temperatures and you have soil profile like this, and they don't have ample rainfall. They will have a major crop problem. But they've proven they can grow good crops when it's dry, as long as it's not hot. They can still grow good crops. That's the importance, and that's why I picked Des Moines, because if Des Moines is 100 degrees, Casey, you could draw a circle around Des Moines, and you can bet that that the whole circle, Des Moines is 100 degrees, so is everybody else in a sphere around Des Moines, and that's the key metric to follow. If you start seeing weather models talking about 100 degree temperatures or a stretch of multiple days of 100 degree temperatures starting to develop sometime in late June into July with that kind of a moisture profile, the markets are going to react to something like that, because we have not seen that since 2012. It'll have been 12 years since we've had that scenario. It's been a while. And I think we have a high elevated risk for this year and next to have that scenario play out. And so that is not encouraging unless there's a dramatic change in the rainfall pattern to alter that, which I don't think is likely to occur.
Yep. No, I think so. So there's plenty of things to pay attention to, just like we've seen in years past, where obviously weather's going to make a difference here as we move forward. Sean, any final thoughts on the weather patterns that you're talking about here? Anything else you want to throw out there on that before we close down?
The only thing I would, beyond what we just said, is just keep an eye on southern Russia winter wheat areas. Mm-hmm. If you look at a similar, they have soil moisture anomalies for the world, not just the U.S. And the southern half of Russia is the soil moisture is getting dry, and the weather models are not showing a lot of rainfall for the next 3 to 4 weeks. And that's a core key area for winter wheat production as it's coming out of dormancy. That's something the market will absolutely 100% pay attention to. Russia is the big dog when it comes to wheat, especially winter wheat, and that is the big area. And even keep an eye on Ukraine. Things just look dry in this area, and the soil moisture is coming up yellows and oranges all of a sudden. And we're moving into the area where the greatest need for moisture is coming. And everyone's been projecting, a good crop from them and all is well. But all won't be well if they go another 30 days with dry weather, especially if you throw in a little heat. So nothing to hit the panic button yet, Casey, but we're always trying to look ahead at things to watch. Watch southern Russia. It could be a story that develops for winter wheat and creates an additional catalyst for maybe getting more of these short speculators out of the grain complex and giving farmers an opportunity to catch up on some of these cash sales that, that they certainly need to keep moving the ball forward on.
Okay. I'm going to pull this up real quick so you can talk about it a little bit here. Let me share my screen again. And share screen. And this is it. Yep. All right, so here's the drought map. I don't know if you can see it all right, Sean, but basically the southern area right here of Russia, and then if you look all through here, this is where the drought map's showing that this area is going to continue to stay dry in some of those, like you just talked about, in those areas of right, so here's Ukraine right here, and it's you've seen some dryness down there as well. So this is kind of echoing what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's creeping up. It's creeping up. The southern half, I mean, I looked at some, you got to move to the right a little bit. Nope, to the right. Nope. Keep going. Nope, the other way. Yeah. See where it says Volgograd?
Right here, yeah.
Yeah. All that red and orange in that south of there. Mm-hmm. And off to the west of it, it's creeping up. It's been creeping up. We have the rainfall. And if you look at projected rainfall, what you can do with these is you could actually look at the weather forecast by the models and then project what this graph's going to look like 2 weeks from now. And it's going to encompass a good portion of the bottom half of the core of the most productive area of Russia's winter wheat. Vegetative health is starting to falter in this region as well. Like I said, we're definitely not at a plot point where the market's going to react yet, but if we go another 2 or 3 weeks with dry weather and some heat and we start moving those soil moisture levels further north and we start running these vegetative levels further down, the market's going to start to pay attention to the one that is the price setter in the for world wheat is Russia. We know that they've become the price setter for sure. And what happens in Russia will not stay in Russia. So just something to keep an eye on. Not a market mover today, but could be a few weeks from now.
Right. Yep, pay attention to that throughout the growing cycle here, and we'll keep you up to date here with Sean as he comes on and talks about what's happening there. So, Sean, probably a good place to stop. Folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what it is you're doing. Oh, first off, thanks for interviewing me the other day for the port story there. I've been watching that come through there. I'm actually going to talk to a guy here a little bit later today that's an exporter that can kind of shed some light on that. But there's that's a big developing story that could have some massive impacts on a lot of things. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. And I've posted it on Twitter and LinkedIn, and I'll be sending it out to my database here over the weekend. And so it was a great interview. I think a lot of people that, everyone who's informing is interested in what's going on with equipment. Everybody has a reason to pay attention. And so, someone like yourself that's got their fingertips on what's happening and the pulse of that industry with an unprecedented situation, quite frankly, was really good to get you on and get your expertise. And I think already I've been hearing some great feedback of the kind of information you gave and the actionable recommendations that you made. So
awesome. I appreciate that. So if folks want to reach out to you, Sean, what's the best way to do that?
Our Twitter page is at Ferretex11, LinkedIn page as well, or you can go to our website, Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com, where we have interviews and some information about some of our work, some of our forecasts. Once again, I want to stress to everyone, we don't spend all our day sitting around posting on social media. We have a lot more better things to do with our time than that. But nonetheless, from time to time, we do try to put some valuable information out to help those in farming that can, maybe give them a little leg up. And those would be great places to keep tabs with what we're thinking.
Right on. Sean, appreciate you being on. We'll catch you again next week. I am Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. And check us out on Snapchat and TikTok at Moving Iron Podcast as well. Got a new website up. It's movingironllc.com. Check that out. All the information for the Moving Iron Summit is there. So if you want to register for that, go ahead and get signed up for that. Sean will be there talking about running a little breakout session there that you can go listen to what he has to say about what's going on in the world. Check out my stuff over at Successful Farming, which is agriculture.com. I write a couple articles a week for them, a couple articles a month. I'd be really busy if I did that every week. A couple articles a month, and we'll do a podcast as well for them. So check that information out as well, and we'll go from there. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Sean Hackett. Let's go do some iron, folks. Out. The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers, and close more deals? Reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads. D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers. Market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving.